I'm Mark Purcell. This is Cincinnati Edition. The final presentation of the Cincinnati Zoo's Barrow Conservation Lecture Series season is on Wednesday. Dr. Stephen Amstrup will be the speaker discussing his work with polar bears. And he's on the phone with Thane Maynard this morning.
Hi, Stephen Amstrup. How are you?
Good. How are you, Thane?
Thanks for spending a few minutes with us. We're looking forward to you coming to speak at the zoo soon.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to my trip back there, too.
Now, you know, everywhere you go, I'm sure people say the same thing, but it just seems that polar bears, the news couldn't be worse. They're having a hard time in zoos breeding. They're having a terrible time in the Arctic. Do you have any good news about polar bears?
Well, I guess the good news is that we know what the problem is that's threatening them in the wild, and that there is still time for us to do something about it.
Well, that's good to hear. Tell us what it is we need to do.
Well, polar bears depend entirely on the surface of the sea ice for catching their prey. And unfortunately, as temperatures rise, the sea ice melts, so there's less and less habitat. But we know that we can change the way we live to be less reliant on carbon-based energy sources and make a big difference for the future of polar bears by keeping temperatures from rising too far.
So do you sense in your work, which has been extensive, by the way, that we're making any headway toward lessening our impact?
You know, the steps that we've taken so far have been what I would call baby steps, at least in this country. If we look to other civilized parts of the world, other developed parts of the world, there are some pretty stellar examples. Take Germany, for example. Nobody thinks of Germany as an underdeveloped country. It's
right.
An industrial giant. Yet, people in Germany produce less than half of the per capita greenhouse gases that we do. And I heard a statistic recently that on sunny days in Germany, right now, they are able to rely entirely on renewable resources. Now, of course, there's lots of days in Germany that aren't sunny, but we're a long ways from that in this country. France also is way ahead of us. Nobody thinks of France as an underdeveloped country. So I think there are some really good examples. Now, the challenges here may be different. We have bigger spaces, for example. We have to overcome a greater dependency on automobiles. But I think that the minor inconveniences that we would face for that, to accomplish this end goal, are well worth it for the future of our children and grandchildren.
And, you know, zoos are largely in the public education business. And I will say it's been heartening that more and more frequently in publications for the general audience, you'll see more and more good information about climate change. There was a big coverage recently in USA Today, which is not known as a big environmental rag, but they came out saying, hey, here's the story.
You know, I think we're going to see ever more of that. You know, I've been very fortunate to have spent 30 years basically living with polar bears in the Arctic. But most people never get a chance to go to the Arctic and see a polar bear in the wild, so they can't get that personal inspiration in the Arctic. But they can go to the local zoo. And if the zoo has a nice display and good messaging, the zoos can play a really important role in inspiring people to go out and do what they need to do to save the polar bears that live very far away. We like to think at Polar Bears International, we like to think of polar bears and zoos as ambassadors for their wild counterparts.
Absolutely, because things like climate change or reduction in carbon use seem like something very abstract versus seeing animals that people actually love, and great big predators such as polar bears are among the most popular animals in the world, are a compelling way to put a face on it, that's for sure. Now, you know, you mentioned that 30 years in the Arctic and working directly with them. Have you yourself seen a decline either in the numbers or in the range of polar bears?
Well, you know, there's many recognized subpopulations of polar bears. And we've only seen statistical effects of a warming climate in a couple of them. The population near Churchill, Manitoba, in western Hudson Bay has been documented to be declining as a result of the loss of sea ice there. And in the Beaufort Sea, where I did most of my work, we've seen declines in physical stature and in reproduction and survival rates, which ultimately will lead to population declines, although we haven't yet documented an observed decline. But the handwriting is on the wall. If you're not producing enough cubs, and if the cubs aren't surviving, pretty soon there won't be any adults.
You know, you mentioned Germany and France and European nations. How about Canada? Because I know Canada is home to lots of polar bears. What's their stance?
Well, Canada is doing about the same as we are. You know, as a country, they produce far fewer greenhouse gases than we do. But the whole population of Canada is only about the size of the population of California. Per capita, they're right up there with us, perhaps even worse than us in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. So they're not setting a very good example either. My philosophy, though, is that all over the world, people look to the United States as an example, as a leader. And I think it really is up to us to set the course here, to say, look, we can do better. We care about not only the future of polar bears, but the future for everything as we know it. And we're going to make a change.
You know, in the case of polar bears, it's daunting to imagine 100 years from now. I have a great hope that they will not completely disappear. But if you really look at the maps, which you're very familiar with, about the melting and shrinking of the ice, I imagine they'll eventually live a wild population way up by the North Pole.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. You can think of it very simplistically that the southern areas where polar bears occur presently are the ones where they're going to disappear first. And we're already seeing that to some extent in Hudson Bay. It's a little bit more complicated than that because there are sea ice currents and things like that. But I think you're absolutely right that the last polar bears are likely to be in the very high Arctic, in northeastern Greenland and far northern Canada.
Yes, that's something. Okay, so Stephen, what about, if you will, naysayers? And I will admit, I have not read the new book, but I read a review of a book that you're probably familiar with, of a reporter who went up to Churchill and came out with a book called Never Look a Polar Bear in the Eye. And at least the review made it sounds like he thought there's polar bears all over the place.
One of the things that we've chronically faced is that when we are expressing our concerns about polar bears, we're not expressing our concerns mainly about what the status is now. We're concerned about what the future will be. Mm-hmm. And as I said a moment ago, there's only been a few populations where we've documented strong negative trends related to sea ice. But we know that the Earth can only continue to warm as long as greenhouse gas concentrations rise. And we know that a warmer world will hold less sea ice habitat for polar bears. So ultimately, we know that all polar bears will disappear if we don't do something to mitigate the rise in greenhouse gases. So when somebody says, well, why should we be concerned about polar bears in the future because there's plenty out there now, I think that they're missing the point. And, you know, the other thing that you hear and in that book that you just mentioned and elsewhere, people are constantly saying, well, you know, there's too much uncertainty to do anything. There's too many answers that we don't, or too many questions that we don't yet have answers to. But in point of fact, we already know that the laws of physics require the world to warm as long as greenhouse gas concentrations rise. So all the uncertainty about exactly when it might be too hot to grow wheat in Kansas or when the last sea ice will disappear in the high Arctic, those questions are really only relevant if we don't care what kind of a future we're leaving to future generations.
You know, it's an interesting time to be living because awareness is up, concern is up, particularly among young people. Our zoo deals a lot with college-age students, grad students, keen interest, and yet translating that into either behavior on the part of the general public or certainly leadership on the part of politicians is a challenge. I will say I've seen good leadership from some corporations. Procter & Gamble's headquartered in Cincinnati, and they have a very good sustainability program.
Yes, and I have really felt, and we at Polar Bears International have felt for some time, that because governments aren't leading us, you know, our elected leaders aren't leading us, We really need to look towards business leaders that are doing the right thing, that recognize the challenges to maintaining a sustainable business model.
Here's to what you're doing and the folks at Polar Bears International. Cincinnati Zoo is glad to be a partner with you all, and we look forward to you coming here soon.
And I'm looking forward to seeing you there.
Thanks so much. My guest has been Dr. Stephen Anstrup of the group Polar Bears International. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.